Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show. I'm your host, Guy Allen. Tonight on Life Rattle number 1384, we feature two stories by Life Rattle writer Susanna Mann. Susanna Mann was born in Gorgheni, Romania, in 1978. At the time Susanna was born, about 95% of Gorgheni's 20,000 citizens, like Susanna, were Hungarians who spoke Hungarian and Romanian. Mixed with the Hungarians were some Romanians and some Roma. Gorgheni is a place of mountain beauty and old-world visual charm, like something out of old European folk tales. But in the 21st century, many of Gorgheni's young people, like Susanna and her husband, Lahel, immigrated to other countries to find jobs. Susanna and Lahel came to Canada on skilled workers' visas in 2008. Lahel is a veterinarian, and Susanna has a position as a language instructor for newcomers at Sheridan College. Susanna and Lahel have two children, boys, 4 and 2 years old. Susanna studied English and Hungarian literature with a double major in linguistics at Babas Baljoi University in Romania. She has since earned her master's degree in language education at the Ontario Institute for Studies in Education. In Life Rattle podcast number 1383, Susanna read two charming and wonderful stories that take place in Romania. The two stories Susanna will read in this podcast bring us up to the time she and her husband Lahel emigrate to Canada. Their first story, titled The Kennel, tells of the early struggles Susanna and Lahel went through as they looked for jobs and a place to live in their new country. Susanna and Lahel find a job managing the Woofy Express dog kennels. In return for living at the kennels and taking round-the-clock care of the Yorkshire Terriers Woofy Express raises, Woofy's owner, Donna, gives Susanna and Lahel a place to live at the kennel in Mississauga. The story tells of their adventures with the dogs and of their complicated relations with Donna, the eccentric owner. Susanna's story has many layers to it. The story is by turns touching, infuriating, funny, and gratifying. Really, The Kennel is a story of the struggles of two recent immigrants to Canada, working hard to survive and find a place in their new society. Let's listen now as Susanna Mann reads her story, The Kennel.
The Kennel by Susanna Mann. The black SUV pulls out of the GO train station in Mississauga. I perch on the beige leather seat in the back and my eyes drift to the brown trees of Erindale Park stretching in the April sunlight. Leo, my husband, sits in the passenger seat, stares out the windshield, and makes small talk to Donna, who drives. Leo and I arrived to Canada a month ago with two backpacks, a box of books, and two skilled worker immigrant visa stamps in our red Romanian passports. We have looked for jobs. In Romania, Leo worked as a veterinarian, and I taught English as a foreign language in a high school. Leo got an offer from Donna to work as a kennel manager. The best part of the job? It comes with an apartment, for free. Donna insisted that I see the premises before Leo signs his contract, so we traveled from Markham, our temporary location, to Mississauga, our possible future location, to take a look and make a decision. I scan the bachelor apartment. The beige walls look sad. The baseboard, once white, now grayish, has dry dog poop in its crevices. Stains on the copper-colored tile floor stick to the soles of my shoes. I pinch the curtain with two fingers and peek out the window. A few cars whiz by on Wolfdale Road. Sunlight sparkles on their top before they disappear. An auburn field stretches beyond the four lanes, with two small farms surrounded by trees in the distance. I look down to the gravel driveway, where the black SUV is parked steps from the door. A wooden sign on the grass in front of the house advertises, Woofy Express, colorful paw prints painted around it. I follow the tile into the kitchen. I can barely squeeze between the round table and the fridge to the windows that let in the April light that morning. A light green field moves in the wind on this side of the house. A forest marks the line between the ground and the sky. A round-shaped pond behind the wooden fence mirrors the clouds, and a family of ducks glides on the water. I see a neighbor's barn on the right. Two horses munch the grass. "So, where are the dogs?" I ask Leo, my husband. "Just wait, and you'll see," he says. We stomp down the stairs to the ground floor. Donna waits for us in the reception office and fondles the cross on her gold necklace. She is almost as tall as Leo. Donna's voice fills the space, and her gestures make her look bigger than she is. She owns Woofy Express, a kennel for Yorkshire Terriers, breeds Yorkies, and attends dog shows with her Canadian and American champion dogs on weekends. This is the entrance to the kennel. We built this patio so that the dogs can run around during the day, she says, and pulls a hazy glass door aside at the far end of the office. We step into a room the size of a house, with lots of windows and a concrete floor. The walls echo the noise. They call this space the patio because all the windows are open in the summer to let fresh air in. Several fences parcel up the ground. We need the fence for different groups. You can't just put anybody with anybody or they're gonna get into a fight, Donna says. The dogs bark, pant, run and jump along the fences as high as they can. These little fur balls roll back and forth in a mix of rage and happiness. I giggle and hold my hand to my chest as I step over the fences. A few narrow wooden stairs lead from the patio to the basement. The cages arrange in rows about 8 inches from the floor, and another row of cages attaches higher to the wall. The dogs squeeze into the cages at 3 p.m. and rest on soft pillows until the following morning. I see a washing machine and dryer big enough to fit myself into both. "For the pee pads and the pillows," says Donna. We climb back up to the ground floor. Another door from the reception area leads into another kitchen, followed by a living room that serves as a kindergarten now. Rubber mats on the floor form runways for the puppies. Toys, balls, and pieces of rawhide scatter on the floor. Fences run parallel to the wall and form a 1-meter-wide path on two sides of the room. 5 puppies jostle, bustle, and sneeze when they notice us. Their yapping turns high-pitched as we shuffle through the room behind Donna. A bedroom hides in the dark behind the living room. Donna lowers her voice. "So, this is where we have the moms and the babies, the nursery. The cages have more space here. As my eyes adjust to the dusk, I glimpse bitches hovering over their puppies. Donna opens a cage. "This is classy," she says. "She just had a puppy." I step closer. The dog gives out a low, rumbling sound. I stop midway. She's the alpha, very protective. I snatch my hand from the cage. Classy and I regard each other suspiciously. 10 minutes later, Leo, Donna, and I plop down to the sofas in the office and talk. "So, what do you think?" asks Leo. "We'll take it," I smile. "You want to move here?" "Are you sure about the house?" Donna asks. "Yes, definitely," I say. "I can't wait to get out of Leo's cousin's place in Markham." "You know," Donna adds, "you have to be on site all the time. If you go out after your shift ends, you have to let me know. Just write on that board the best way for me to reach you and when you expect to be back." She nods towards the dry erase whiteboard on the wall. "Someone always has to be in the house with the dogs." "So," she asks after we agree on moving there, "what are your plans in Canada?" "I want to be a teacher," I say. "And I want to become a veterinarian," says Leo. Donna turns from Leo to me, looks me in the eye, then glances back at Leo and says, "At least you have dreams." Her words ring in my ears for days. A week later, I scrub the tile, I scour the baseboard, I coat the stairs chocolate brown. We paint the walls a light peachy color. Donna buys us white blinds for the windows. I get used to the barking. The fur balls evolve into personalities with names. Angela, the angel-eyed, Candy, the prom queen, Zazzy, the elegant old lady, Zippy, the best friend, Piper, the macho, Mini-Me, the spoiled brat, Little Fox, the acrobat, Digger, the hair-lipped guy, Wendy, the pirate queen, Pixie, the quick-witted one, Lola, the sports champion, Tsuki, my favorite, and many others. I recognize them by their looks and call them by their names. They live in a mini-society along the fences. Friendships, bullying, secret love affairs, beatings, mysterious pregnancies when Leo or the other staff members don't pay attention. If the barking gets too loud, Leo and Donna slap the fences with a fly swatter. The dogs go quiet and slump down. I go downstairs to the basement at 3 p.m. to watch the herd go into their cages. As Leo opens the fences one by one, a flow of hairy energy rushes down the stairs, spreads onto the floor, and sneaks into the lower cages where defrosted meatballs and fresh water await. The remaining dogs clamber on the patio along the fence. Some jump over it. The woofing escalates into shrieking. I can't hear my own voice. Leo runs around with Yorkies in both hands, puts them in the cages, closes the doors, and checks them twice. In a few minutes, everyone wolfs down the meatballs on their pillows. Donna gives us furniture for the room. She brings over delicious Italian dishes with garlic and herbs. She wants to lend us money. We refuse. She writes me a cover letter and drives me around town in her black SUV to find me a job. I get hired as a waitress. Donna teaches me the Canadian food culture over an espresso in my kitchen. Sunny side up, she shows me her palm. Over easy, she turns her palm upside down. Her smile betrays the delight she takes in this explanation. On my days off from the restaurant, I clean the cages in the nursery, feed the dogs, bathe them, groom the show dogs, mop the floor, and fall in love with the Yorkies. I carry a few of them upstairs talk to them, and pat their furry little heads. They become my friends, my only friends in Canada. Donna yells. She yells at the people who work for her. Girls in their early 20s start the day smiling, make mistakes, and storm out crying. Staff changes frequently. We stay. Donna yells at her husband on the driveway. I watch them from my open bathroom window while I brush my teeth. Donna yells on the phone. She yells at Leo when Princess, tired from nursing her 5 puppies, faints. Leo yells back and revives the dog. Donna asks me if I want to keep Tsuki. No, no, thank you, but I can't afford to have a dog right now. We live in one room, you see. This is not the right time, I sigh. No, I can't have her. I can't have a dog. There's so much to learn. We have to study, build a new life. No, I can't have her. This is the right choice, I repeat to myself. Tsuki sells within a month. I cry for 2 days. Barking wakes us up in the middle of the night. The August storm brings an enormous downpour. The house creaks as if it wants to break into two. Lightning flashes. The rumble of thunder follows. The howling intensifies. It's frantic now. Leo rushes into the basement. The dogs are agitated. He talks and hums to them until everybody calms down. Leo shouts from the bottom of the stairs, Susie, I need you. I need your help. Right now, please. Oh no, not this. He went downstairs an hour ago to tend to a bitch in labor. I shuffle down the stairs in my slippers and pajamas and walk into the living room. Katie is on a table. She pants and trembles. The contractions come in waves. Her little body strains, relaxes, and tenses again. Call Donna, demands Leo, and I scramble for the phone. As Donna answers, I hear Leo's voice in the background. Come here, come quickly. I need to go, sorry, I say on the phone. Please help her, pleads Donna from the other end of the line. I plunk down the phone on the counter without hanging up. I run to Leo. Hold her tight, he says. I can't look. I turn my head half away so that I see only the dog's head. I squint my eyes, grasp the dog, and sweat. At every contraction, I grip her tightly and try to soothe her. It's okay, it's okay, it's okay. I remind myself to keep my head turned away. Katie whimpers. It's okay, it's okay. She stops, then cries out again. It's okay, everything's gonna be okay. I look for words, but nothing else comes to my mind. I examine the pale wall, with scratch marks up until knee level. The puppies stare at me, their 2 front legs up on the fence. The TV is on in front of me, and the images on the screen change silently. My hand feels Katie's heartbeat, and her slightly greasy short hair slips through my fingers. I look down, and our eyes lock. We're almost done, Leo says. And here, look at me. I turn my head slowly and he hands me a wet puppy. She fits into my palm. What do I do with her? I ask. Massage her back up and down, up and down. Leo says. I rub the puppy with my fingers and study her. She lies in my hand like a wet glove. I can't bear the silence. So, until when do I do this? I ask. Until she cries out, Leo says as he cares for Katie. The puppy moves her head and gives out a faint whimper. I exhale. Donna bursts in. She gives me a hug and holds me in her arms for a minute. Thank you so much, guys, she beams. Especially you, Susanna. This was so brave of you. Thank you, I mutter. I'm happy the puppy's alive. I climb the stairs back to our room. I smile until I fall asleep. Donna and I sip coffee in my kitchen. She stands in front of the window, looks out, moves her head as if searching for something. Where's the pond? Where are the ducks? Where are the deer that used to come up to the fence? Where are my horses? They bulldozed everything, she says. A new suburban development sprouts up behind our house. They build the streets and the street lights, dig holes for the basements, erect wood-smelling drywalls, and hammer planks all day long. Three-level family homes, townhouses with towers, and four Victorian-style luxury homes look down on us. On a windy spring day, when people jog on the trails crisscrossing the neighborhood and families unpack their kids from cars on their driveways, and the smell of dinner lingers in the air, and the orchids bark in the kennel, Leo and I pack our things to move to Toronto. I teach English as a second language, and Leo has one more exam to become a licensed veterinarian in Canada.
That was Susanna Mann reading her story, The Kennel. One line that stands out for me in that story is the owner's comment when Susanna tells her that Lahel wants to be a veterinarian and Susanna wants to become a teacher. Well, at least you have dreams, Donna says. This comment suggests a snooty skepticism about these newcomers to Canada. Susanna's next story, titled Saturday Afternoon, moves us ahead a few years in the life of Susanna and Lahel in Canada. They have two young babies, both boys, and Leo, as Susanna calls Lahel in the story, must work Saturdays as a veterinarian in a clinic in the beaches. Susanna is left alone to care for the babies in their high-rise apartment overlooking the 401. Susanna has a bad day. A Saturday afternoon of the kind that anyone left on their own with two young babies will recognize. We have little writing about the experience of taking care of young babies. That is no doubt because most of the people who take care of young babies are left with neither the energy nor the time or nerve to write honestly about that experience. Let's listen now as Susanna Mann reads her story, Saturday Afternoon.
Saturday Afternoon by Susanna Mann. I'm leaving now, shouts Leo, my husband, from the hallway. Okay, I moan while the baby clamps down on my nipple. Good luck, he adds. Bye, I shout back from the master bedroom. The door clicks, and he's gone. I'm left with the kids. Peter, 2 and a half, lies on the beanbag chair in the living room with his bottle of milk. He will be quiet for a good 10 minutes. Leo, my husband, works as a veterinarian. He works weekends and nights. We live in a 2-bedroom condo on the 29th floor in North Toronto, next to the highway. Peter has his own room. Leo, Paul, our 5-month-old baby, and I share the master bedroom and often the bed, too. Every Saturday and Sunday after lunch, Leo puts on his scrubs, takes his bag, and leaves for his 10-hour shift at Beaches Animal Hospital in the Beaches in Toronto. I stay at home with the kids. I also study full-time to get my master's degree. I dread weekends. Peter is my firstborn son. His big hazel eyes sparkle in his round face, always looking for mischief. Movement is his main element. He's quick, witty, and stubborn. Paul, 5 months old, is a chubby and hungry baby. He's got blue eyes and perfectly shaped ears. I marvel at his features every time I breastfeed him. I like to play with the few hairs on his head. I stroke his back. He almost sleeps now, but his lips still attach to me. He swallows rhythmically. I rub his back absent-mindedly. I lean over as if to cover him with my upper body. I smell of oil and sweat from cooking. Paul drifts off to sleep. I sit with him in my arms for a few more minutes. Then I put him into his crib and sneak out of the room. It's 2 p.m. Peter is at half of the bottle now. I'm going to try to put him down for a nap. I take him into his room. It's warm in there, so I take off his pants. His diaper is dry. I put him on the bed into his grow bag sleep sack, pull the zipper, take the shoelace from the drawer, lace it through the two zipper heads at the bottom of the sack, and tie two very tight knots. "There, you can't get out of this now," I murmur. "You're gonna take a big nap." I slip out of his room. Peter can climb out of anything, even the Parents' Choice Award winner grow bag. But we're one step ahead. We've got the shoelace. Peter can't untie the knots, not yet. There's also a baby lock on his door. It locks from inside. I found him in the living room once in the middle of the night. And on the countertop. And in the sink. Anyway, he's safe now. It's 2:30 p.m. The baby babbles from the bedroom. I take him out of his crib. He smiles. I put him on the bed and snuggle up beside him. I read The Secret Spiritual World of Children by Tobin Hart for my book review assignment. Paul complains, so I switch back to eye contact. "Will you fall asleep?" I wonder. He kicks his legs and turns on his belly. He lifts his head up and watches me curiously. "Okay, Mommy needs a shower. Let's go take a shower." I put him in the bouncer and we both head off to the bathroom. When we come out, Paul's eyes look heavy. A few more drops of breast milk and he falls asleep. I hear Peter rustle in the other room. I prepare another bottle and give it to him. I lie down in the living room, hoping that Peter will somehow fall asleep. I hear him rattle the door. I get up and rush to his room. He greets me with the most innocent smile. "Made pee-pee, made pee-pee." "What? But you have the diaper on," I say. I feel the wetness on my socks as I take another step. I look around baffled. A dry diaper yawns on the floor. I reach down to feel the grow bag. It's wet. But how? How could he take off the diaper? When I unzip him, I realize that his socks are off too. Here is a new puzzle to solve. It's 4 p.m. Paul is up and all smiles. Peter looks at his picture books. I read The Secret Spiritual World of Children. When I look up, Peter is nowhere in sight. I listen, and then I hear it. The dishwasher just started. "Damn it, Peter! We agreed you can't touch it. No touching the dishwasher, okay?" Peter runs away. Uh-oh. I have to let the machine run the whole cycle now. Otherwise, there is going to be water left at the bottom and mold can take hold, will take hold. We learned this recently, too. Blood rushes in my veins, up in my face. I grab Peter. He needs to learn this lesson. I drag him back to the dishwasher. No touching the dishwasher. Do you understand? Do you understand? I yell. Peter howls. I throw him into his room and close the door behind me. He has to learn. He has to learn, I say between my clenched teeth. Peter wails uncontrollably. I want to run out of the house. I can't take it. I have to do something. I turn around and open the door with a swing. Peter is right in front of it. The door hits him in the face. It's 5:20 p.m. Everybody chills. Peter has another bottle of milk. Paul is happy in the bouncer, and the show Modern Family plays on the TV. Paul swings himself by kicking his legs in the bouncer. Peter watches it from the corner of his eyes. Suddenly, he pushes the bouncer with his feet, and it turns over. Paul's head hits the floor. His cries echo through the walls, pour out on the window, and linger over Highway 401 and the houses below us. My ears ring, my nerves sizzle. I don't say a word or I will shout. I wait. In this very minute, the phone rings. It's Reka, my friend. She is also a vet and on her way to work the night shift at the hospital. Do all these people work weekends and nights? I wonder at times. I'm relieved that she called. You just saved Peter's ass, I laugh in the phone. I put her on the speaker. Modern Family fades. Rika and I talk for a good 40 minutes. Paul's got a big red bump on his head. I remind myself, if he vomits, we'll go to the ER. He stops crying and curls up for another feed. I talk and breastfeed until Paul falls asleep on the nursing pillow. Peter climbs up onto the sofa, wiggles himself behind my back and pulls my hair. We keep talking with Reka. On spur of the moment, Peter dives down from the sofa head first. He lands on the hardwood floor. The bawling starts again. Paul wakes up. I put him on the floor and rush to tend to Peter. I apologize and hang up the phone. I bring paper towels. He hates the tears flowing down his cheeks, so I wipe them. It's okay. Everything will be fine, I whisper. Mommy's gonna give you a healing kiss. Ma! There. I take him in my arms and hold him tight. I hum in his ear. I don't know for how long we stay like this. His sharp wails fade slowly. So does my splintering headache. My shirt is full of snot and tears. Silence cloaks us like a big old coat. Darkness creeps in from the outside. It's 10 p.m. now. I put a sleeping Paul in his crib. Peter fell asleep an hour ago. I tiptoe into the washroom for another hot shower. After my shower, I sit down to write.
That was Susanna Mann reading her story, Saturday afternoon. If there is anything lonelier than being alone, it is certainly the experience of being alone with two young babies on a long Saturday afternoon when things don't go well. It is an amazing feat that Susanna has brought us this beautiful story. That concludes Life Rattle podcast number 1384. I recorded Susanna Mann reading her stories. Arnie Actman and I, Guy Allen, created Life Rattle. Lori Callis is the managing editor of Life Rattle and of Life Rattle Press. Tune in to our future podcast when other new writers will present their work on Life Rattle where you can hear stories by people in our communities, stories you won't hear anywhere else.